This is Age of Treason Radio. With your host, Tan Stoffel.
Yaki on Liberalism, Part 5. We're deep in the weeds now, reading from Yaki's Imperium, what I've called Chapter 2 in the past. It turns out is, the book is broken into four or five sections, and this is the second section. It's more than what people would normally think of as a chapter. The section that this is from is titled The 20th Century Political Outlook, and we're picking up here on page 212. A moment's reflection shows that liberalism is entirely negative. It is not a formative force, but always and only a disintegrating force. It wishes to depose the twin authorities of church and state, substituting for them economic freedom and social ethics. It happens that organic realities do not permit of more than two alternatives. The organism can be true to itself, or it becomes sick and distorted, a prey for other organisms. Thus, the natural polarity of leaders and led cannot be abolished without annihilating the organism. Liberalism was never entirely successful in its fight against the state, despite the fact that it engaged in political activity throughout the 19th century in alliance with every other type of state disintegrating force. Thus, there were national liberals, social liberals, free conservatives, liberal Catholics. They allied themselves with democracy, which is not liberal, but irresistibly authoritarian in success. They sympathized with anarchists when the forces of authority sought to defend themselves against them. In the 20th century, liberalism joined Bolshevism in Spain, and European and American liberals sympathized with Russian Bolsheviks. An interesting point that Yaki makes there, that democracy is not liberal, but is authoritarian in nature. And this bucks the usual perception, which I mentioned several installments ago, that liberalism is associated with democracy. It's, in many people's minds, it's actually equated with democracy. The two are pretty much the same thing today, and for a long time now, probably almost a century. It's been called the system by which this new world order calls itself is liberal democracy. But the chapter right after this chapter about liberalism, Yaki discusses democracy, and I don't think I'll get to it, but I'll urge you, if you're curious about why he considers democracy distinct and different from liberalism, you can go ahead and read ahead there what he has to say. But he's reiterating here what we already saw in his discussion of political organisms before reading about liberalism. I went a little further back, several tens of pages back, and we could see this coming. He was building toward this idea that liberalism is a disintegrating force that dissolves political organisms, kills them dead. It, as I put it, it erases or distorts at least the friend-enemy disjunction, what Yaki saw as the very basis of political organisms, this friend-enemy disjunction. And also he's reiterating here the opposition between liberalism and authority. He actually states it as liberalism is freedom from authority. Liberalism can only be defined negatively. It is a mere critique, not a living idea. Its great word, freedom, is a negative. It means, in fact, freedom from authority, i.e., disintegration of the organism. In its last stages, it produces social atomism, in which not only the authority of the state is combated, but even the authority of society and the family. Divorce takes equal rank with marriage, children with parents. This constant thinking in negatives caused political activists like Marx, Lorenz V. Stein, and Ferdinand LaSalle to despair of it as a political vehicle. Its attitudes were always contradictory. It sought always a compromise. It sought to always, quote, balance democracy against monarchy, managers against hand workers, state against society, legislative against judicial. In a crisis, liberalism, as such, was not to be found. Liberals found their way onto one or the other side of a revolutionary struggle, depending upon the consistency of their liberalism and its degree of hostility to authority. The point that Yaki makes there about, in the end, liberalism even goes against the authority of society and the family itself, brought to my mind the Frankfurt School's seminal work titled The Authoritarian Personality, where three or four Jews led by Theodor Adorno wrote this attack on the European family, psychopathologizing the family. And when I looked up the Wikipedia entry for the authoritarian personality, it actually was pretty forthright. I have a feeling that this section will disappear in time, but for now it describes it as the impetus for the authoritarian personality was the Holocaust, the attempted genocidal extinction of European Jews by Adolf Hitler's National Socialist Party. Adorno had been a member of the, quote, Frankfurt School, unquote, a predominantly Jewish group of philosophers and Marxist theorists who fled Germany when Hitler shut down their Institute for Social Research. Adorno et al. Were thus motivated by a desire to identify and measure factors that were they believed were to contribute to anti-Semitic and fascistic traits. And there's a contrast there. We see even what I'm engaged in here is whites look back into our past after a catastrophe like World War II, and we wonder, how did we screw up? How did we do this to ourselves? And we look to our philosophers for an answer in philosophy. The Jews get busy right away figuring out how they can disarm their enemy, how they can defang their enemy. They may not present it openly that way, but that's their mode of thinking. And that's what they did in the wake of World War II. And they did it by psychopathologizing the family itself. And this is the interesting point here is that Yaki predicted this. The authoritarian personality came out in 1950. He was writing in 1947, 1948. And it turned out it wasn't liberalism that produced this attack on the family. It's these Jews, conscious of their Jewish interests, who were trying to defend their Jewish interests, who produced this attack on the European white family. You know, and this gets to my issue with any discussion of liberalism and, you know, to what extent is it really just disguising Jewish influence? It's my my own nitpick with the conversations of descriptions of liberalism. Anyway, continuing with Yaki here. Thus, liberalism in action was just as political as any state ever was. It obeyed organic necessity by its political alliances with non-liberal groups and ideas. Despite its theory of individualism, which of course would preclude the possibility that one man or group could call upon another man or group for the sacrifice or risk of life, it supported unfree ideas like democracy, socialism, Bolshevism, anarchism, all of which demand life sacrifice. That was Yaki's metric or necessary characteristic of a political organism, was that it demanded risk of life because of that friend-enemy disjunction. sort of us and them, to put it in contemporary psychological in-group, out-group type terminology. I would take issue with that anyway, in that liberalism has been able to inspire life sacrifice. But I don't want to get bogged down in picking that nit here. Continuing, from its anthropology of the basic goodness of human nature in general, rationalism produced 18th century encyclopedism, Freemasonry, democracy and anarchism, as well as liberalism, each with its offshoots and variations. Each played its part in the history of the 19th century, and owing to the critical distortion of the whole Western civilization, entailed by the first two world wars, even in the 20th century, where rationalism is grotesquely out of place and slowly transformed itself into irrationalism. Recall Yaki's expression where he said rationalism turned to pragmatism, which was the suicide of reason. I think that's what he's alluding to, but in about the same time, he said that everything between individualism and humanism was irrational, that this was some impulse or drive of liberalism to call everything in between, in other words, nationalism and racialism, which are lie in between individualism and humanism, that those are irrational. So I'm not sure what he's getting at there. It seems contradictory to me with what he said earlier. The corpse of liberalism was not even interred by the middle of the 20th century. Consequently, it is necessary to diagnose even now the serious illness of the Western civilization as liberalism complicated with alien poisoning. So there he alludes to the Jewish influence, the effect, the role of the Jews, although euphemizing it as alien poisoning. It's interesting that he speaks of liberalism as if it's dead in 1948. And this is one of the indications that Yaki regarded liberalism as a purely European product, as a product of the European mind, as an expression of European, purely European strains of thought, which I take issue with. I don't think it is. I think it represents this transition, and it's not a hard transition from black to white. It's a graying over time as Europeans lost control of the very thinking about what their society was and what it was for to the Jews. And the Jews took over control. There was a big discontinuity with World War II, but it was an ongoing process that started long before World War II, and it's not over yet. There are still chunks of our society that still aren't completely dominated by Jews. NASCAR racing is one stupid example I can think of, but the point is that it's a progression over time. To say that, if you could try and identify, say you thought like Yaki does, that liberalism is a purely European thing, when did it die? Even Yaki himself doesn't really provide a date for it, but he does say it's dead, but it hasn't been buried yet. So he leaves off with this idea about its serious illness of Western civilization is liberalism complicated with alien poisoning. At least that's better than the suicide meme that I so frequently encounter amongst people who are talking about, defending Western civilization. They want to defend Western civilization. I'm kind of tied up in that right now with Ricardo Duchesne. And his defense of Western civilization by basically blaming us for doing this to ourselves, that we're the ones that came up with this suicidal liberalism. Anyway, continuing with Yaki here, because liberalism views most men as harmonious or good, it follows that they should be allowed to do as they like. since there is no higher unit to which all are tied, and those superpersonal life and whose superpersonal life dominates the lives of the individuals, each field of human activity serves only itself, as long as it does not wish to become authoritative and stays within the framework of, quote, society, unquote. Thus, art becomes art for art's sake, l'art pour l'art. All areas of thought and action become equally autonomous. Religion becomes mere social discipline, since to be more is to assume authority. Science, philosophy, education, all are equally worlds unto themselves. None are subject to anything higher. Literature and technics are entitled to the same autonomy. The function of the state is merely to protect them by patents and copyrights. But above all, economics and law are independent of organic authority, i.e. of politics. Every paragraph of Yaki's is just pregnant with ideas and historical references. This is a good example of that where there's too many to get into here, but he makes a good point about liberalism, or at least the natural order of the nationalism and racialism, the idea being that there is something beyond the individual, something bigger, and whose life actually dominates your own individual life, whose interests dominate your own interests. You see that, though, even with humanism, that the idea is that it's the whole human race that is more important. But also buried in this paragraph is this l'art pour l'art expression, which dates back to the early 1800s. And interestingly enough, it's one of the early popularizers of the term, of the expression, was Benjamin Constant, who we talked about the last time was Yaki's idea or description of him was that he was the purest expression of the doctrine of liberalism. So this Yaki is a little ambiguous about it here, but apparently, you know, regards this expression of art for art's sake as a inherently liberal idea. Another interesting thing about this art for art's sake is that on the Wikipedia page for it, describes how a Latin version of the phrase "Ars gratia artis" is used as a motto by Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, MGM. It appears in the circle around the roaring head of the Leo of the lion in its motion picture logo. Now, Yaki was mindful of the future, and he speaks here in this next paragraph to future readers, and he's going to speak now about how freedom and economics and law are intertwined and interplay with each other in liberalism. 21st century readers will find it difficult to believe that once the idea prevailed that each person should be free to do as he pleased in economic matters, even if his personal activity involved the starvation of hundreds of thousands, the devastation of entire forest and mineral areas, and the stunting of the power of the organism, that it was quite permissible for such an individual to raise himself above the weakened public authority and to dominate by private means the whole inmost thoughts of whole populations by his control of press, radio, and mechanized drama. That's a very interesting paragraph there. It indicates that Yaki thought things were going to change, and that people in the 21st century surely would see the sense of the way that he was describing things, his critique of liberalism and more, and that they would do something about it, that they would overthrow it. And unfortunately not. It's easy to believe these things that he describes here and is so disgusted by because they're still going on. It's become probably worse in many ways. He He makes reference here also to the a hallmark of the Jews, really, and that had started long before World War II, probably the beginning of the 20th century, this domination by private means of the inmost thoughts of whole populations by his control of press, radio, and mechanized drama. And except it isn't an individual who really, you know, Yaki's talking about here an individual in liberalism, because liberalism allows or encourages only individuals to think of themselves as individuals. Yeah, for white people, that's how we're encouraged to think of it. But that doesn't, the Jews aren't restricted in that way, and the Jews don't act that way. Even Jews who describe themselves as liberals still organize collectively and think of themselves collectively. And when they own Hollywood, they don't just run it as a bunch of independent individual people who happen to be Jews. They run it as Jews, mindful of the fact that they're Jews. And the important thing about that is what Yaki mentions here, that they actually dominate the inmost thoughts of whole populations that way. They literally create our dreams and put them on the screen in front of our eyes. And they become our ideas then. Or we think they do. We think they're our ideas when we see them. It's human psychology there. They will find it, and he's speaking here of the readers in the 21st century, they will find it more difficult yet to understand how such a person could go to the law to enforce his destructive will. Thus, a usurer could, even in the middle of the 20th century, invoke successfully the assistance of the law in dispossessing any numbers of peasants and farmers. It is hard to imagine how an individual could injure the political organism more than by thus mobilizing the soil into dust, in the phrase of the great Freiherr von Stein. I looked up Freiherr von Stein. What I found was a Wikipedia entry for Heinrich Friedrich Karl vom und zum Stein, that was his full name. He's more commonly known as Baron von Stein. And he's described as a Prussian statesman who introduced the Prussian reforms that paved the way for the unification of Germany. And that's probably why Yaki described him as the great, saw him as great, although he might have just been referring to him that his reputation was great, not necessarily approving of it. And because that struck me as odd in reading about von Stein, it seems to me that he was a liberalizer. He was a prominent liberalizer. Part of the Prussian reforms that were passed, they're described here as promoting the abolition of serfdom, subjection of the nobles to manorial imposts, which is basically just means property taxes, and the establishment of a modern municipal system. What's not mentioned in the entry on von Stein, but is mentioned in the Prussian Reforms page, is that it also entailed the emancipation of Jews. It's not clear to me whether von Stein himself directly supported that, but many of the liberalizers of the day did. And that was, it would be foolish to say that it's those liberals, they freed the Jews. They gave the Jews political equality and to overlook the fact that the Jews were lobbying for that. They were using what political and financial and media power they had, even at the time, of course, to get those privileges for themselves. That it was a fight. It was a struggle, actually. Hidden, cryptic, large parts of it, but it was a fight. Especially in retrospect, we can say that that's what the result was, that it was a loss for Europeans to lose control of our society in that way, that the emancipation of the Jews was really an overthrow, or at least the first step, maybe one of the middle steps in the overthrow of European society by the Jews. So Yaki continues, they will find it more difficult yet. I think I read that section already. the phrase of the great Freiherr von Stein. Yeah, long digression there. But this followed inevitably from the idea of the independence of economics and law from political authority. This turning soil, mobilizing the soil into dust he's talking about here, just to remind you of what was in that previous paragraph, that there is nothing higher, no state, it is only individuals against one another. It is but natural that the economically more astute individuals accumulate most of the mobile wealth into their hands. They do not, however, if they are true liberals, want authority with this wealth. For authority has two aspects, power and responsibility. Individualism, psychologically speaking, is egoism. Happiness equals selfishness. Rousseau, the grandfather of liberalism, was a true individualist and sent his five children to the Foundling Hospital. There's some truth in that egoism, individualism is really egoism, or in a sense is basically egoism. Egoism is just an exaggerated sense of self-importance, which is what it takes to be an individualist, to think that you can get by in life all by yourself and that only you matter. That's essentially an exaggerated sense of self-importance, which is what is called egoism. Now he moves on to the law here more specifically. Law as a field of human thought and endeavor has as much independence and as much dependence as every other field. Within the organic framework, it is free to think and organize its material, but like other forms of thought, it can be enrolled in the service of outside ideas. Thus law, originally the means of codifying and maintaining the inner peace of the organism by keeping order and preventing private disputes from growing. He's talking there about the private, political organism and the friend-enemy disjunction, and how the law of totality, that it had to fight and suppress those. So he saw the law as helping that, at least in its natural form. It was transmuted by liberal thought into a means of keeping inner disorder and allowing economically strong individuals to liquidate the weaker ones. This was called, quote, rule of law, unquote. The law state, independence of the judiciary, three different phrases there, rule of law state, and independence of the judiciary. He's making fun, he puts mock quotes around all those expressions. The idea of bringing in the law to make a given state of affairs sacrosanct was not original with liberalism. Back in Hobbes's day, other groups were trying it, but the incorruptible mind of Hobbes said with the most precise clarity that the rule of law means the rule of those who determine and administer the law, that the rule of a higher order, quote-unquote higher order, is an empty phrase and is only given content by the concrete rule of given men and groups over a lower order. What Yaki's saying there is, who pays the piper calls the tune. Who administers the law is who rules, in effect. It's an empirical observation. As opposed to these abstract ideas of higher order, that our society is run by ideas. No, it isn't. It's run by men. In that sense, it's organic. It's not idea. And the irony there is that philosophers came up with this idea.